98% pure potato.
98%
pure potato. Welcome to this latest podcast for 98% Pure Potato. This is John Griffiths speaking. In this podcast, I want to talk about the role of the advertising. When Tracy and I wrote the book, two of the main things that we got out of doing the project was, first of all, looking at the question of customer response. What is the customer going to take out of the communication? And I talked about that in the last podcast. In this podcast, I want to talk about the second question: what is the role of the advertising? And I want to do that with reference to Stephen King's paper, Practical Progress from a Theory of Advertisements, where he goes into the different roles that advertising can play. We weren't able to go into that in detail in the book, but I would direct you immediately to the book, A Masterclass in Brand Planning by Stephen King, which was edited by Judy Lannan and Mary Baskin. And you'll find the paper on page 123. And I just want to explore the ideas in it with you briefly. This isn't the only way of thinking about the way that advertisements work, but it's extremely powerful. And I would put alongside it theories which Mike Hall came up with. I would also refer you to Paul Feldwick's book, The Anatomy of Humbug. But the main purpose of explaining the Stephen King paper in a little bit more detail is to make the point that one of the main jobs for the planner is to define the role that the advertising is going to play. So without further ado, let me wade into this paper. All I'm going to do is to go through the basic elements of it, and obviously you can read that for yourself. But let me just explain the ideas. First of all, Stephen King starts off with the working assumption, which so many have, that the way an advertisement works is to drive action. That's very convenient, and it's nice when that happens, and I would argue that most digital advertising now seems to work on that assumption. But that's not how advertisements work at their best, and actually, when you look at the indirect effects that something can have, that is where it is much more powerful. But it's more difficult to measure, but we therefore have to be much clearer about what we're expecting that the piece of communication is going to do. So let me just take you through the scale. So he starts off saying that there is direct response. Of course there is. There is a role for advertising to get people to do something. But if we want to increase the power that advertising can have, then we need to look at the less direct impacts. And the second level he talks about is looking for information. And what I find quite helpful about this paper is that he puts it into kind of consumer speak. So his way of looking at this is, tell me more. Tell me more, and that's why I'm clicking on the link, I'm filling out the coupon, or picking up the phone, because I need to know more than the advertisement's telling me. So that's this, the something which is quite close to direct, but it's chasing information. His third one is relating to one's own needs, wants, desires. So the idea of this is that rather than telling you something you didn't know, rather than assuming that the person reading the ad is the sort of passive recipient of communication, he's saying that one of the main things that advertising can do is to make a connection with the way you're already feeling. So it's actually drawing something out of you rather than trying to put information into you. So building on that, he talks about this being the what a good idea. So that's much more specific. And obviously, it really depends whether you've had the experience or whether you've experienced the need for which that ad triggers you and you're thinking, yes, I'd like to know more about that or do something about it. But it's basically coming from your experience rather than something they're telling you, which is new. So that's level three. Level four is recalling satisfactions. And he describes that as, that reminds me. And the idea here is that if you've already bought something, if you've already used a product, that all it's doing is to remind you that you've used it, and assuming that your experience has been good, you might need to buy more of it. But there's also a role for advertising in this, which in effect helps you to celebrate the or enjoy the experience of having used the product before. And he particularly references Kodak, which we don't really remember anymore because Kodak is long gone in the digital era, I would suggest. But, you know, the point of Kodak's advertising was not to make people use for photos printed out and processed by Kodak, but to remind people how those photos make them feel. And that is a more indirect way in which advertising can work and is even more powerful than the ones I've talked about already. The next level, which is 5, is modifying attitudes. And the way he describes this is the really response. In other words, the ad is telling you something that you either didn't know or that you are not sure you agree with or you actually actively disagree with. And what's different from this is that as you take on board a point of view or an argument which you are not sure you agree with, what is happening is that whether or not you are persuaded to go along with the argument in the ad, or even if you disagree with it, what it's doing is modifying your attitude as you go. And as a role for advertising, that's a perfectly valid way of doing something, and it's a much cheaper way of modifying a belief than if you put a salesperson in front of someone or try and get them to go through a whole process of buying or using something. Advertising is a very cost-effective way of getting people to modify their attitudes. That's level 5. And then if we go down to level 6, and that is about reinforcing attitudes. And that's his most indirect, but he points out that the point about reinforcing attitudes is that if you can appeal to the beliefs that people already have, that advertising is a very effective way of making those beliefs even stronger. And one of the ways in which a brand can do that is to remind people of what they already think so they stay in that opinion. And that means quite often that you're protecting your own customers from going across to a competitor because you're reminding them about how great the brand is in terms of what it's already delivering to you. But there's other ways as well, more general than just brand loyalty, where rather than trying to do something new, you're simply reinforcing something that is already there. So if I just go through those all those levels again, so away from direct, which is the simplest one, we go through seeking information, we have relating to one's own needs and desires, we have recalling satisfactions, we have modifying attitudes, and we have reinforcing attitudes. And the reason why I think this is so powerful is that it turns on our heads the idea of saying what we should be doing is pushing for a behavior change. Just last week, I was running a workshop with a group of marketers, and we were looking at the difference between business goals, marketing goals, and communication goals. And the way, partly because when you define goals for a project or a brief, it's often helpful to write all three down because it helps you to make a clear separation between what you're trying to do with the three different types of objective. And if you don't, you get them muddled up and you end up using communications for something it's not particularly good at doing. I would define business goals as what the business needs. And that will relate to sales, it'll relate to money, it'll relate to capacity, it may relate to the share price, but it's at that level of what is the business's agenda. If we go down to marketing goals, that's about changing customers' behavior. So that might be about switching customers from one brand to another. It might be keeping them loyal. It might be about persuading them to buy more of the product or to buy the product at a higher price. But those goals would be related to behavior. For communication goals, that is about influencing the levers of customer behavior, but not customer behavior directly itself. And I think that's really important because the way in which Stephen King has through this ladder of indirect effects is he's focused not on changing customer behavior, but influencing the levers of customer behavior. That's to say, getting to people's curiosity, accessing experiences, changing their attitudes, or reinforcing their attitudes. And that, to me, is the area where communications really bites. And coming back to 98% Pure Potato, one of the things that came out over and over was this notion that planners, once they'd answered the question, what is the customer response that we want to take out? And secondly, once they defined the role of the advertising, they'd basically done the job. These were the two important things that they did. and that was much more important than getting into the detail of trying to either make things happen, which are very difficult to do with the budgets that we're being given, or frankly, to do exercises in constructing detailed communication plans, which were pretty much close to fantasy in terms of whether that's the way people actually behaved. So in conclusion, I would suggest that you consider very seriously asking the question, how do you expect the communications to work? How do you expect it to do its job? Because one of the insights from this book is that it's different for every single ad, for every single campaign, and you have to understand that. There's no default way in which communications works. And in that sense, the planner is the one with the ultimate responsibility for trying to understand how the ad is actually working, but also to make sure that in terms of their design of the campaign, that they're thinking about how the ad does its job, because planners should be doing that when nobody else is. Thanks for listening.